Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Retro Computing Roundtable, show number 14.
City is far behind me now, and my world.
RCR is a show about computer history and nostalgia by a group of computer historians, hobbyists, and collectors.
But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I'd like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz?
I'm Carrington Vanston, and I'll be sitting in the host seat for this episode. I mean that literally. I've just carved a replica of Captain Kirk's chair, so I will be sitting down wearing black boots and capris. I hail from Toronto, Canada. I'm also host of shows like 1.023 MHz, a Commodore podcast. Today, I am joined by the usual and disreputable RCR crew. First up, we have David Grealish from Georgia, USA. It's his dulcet tones you can hear on Stan Veit's History of the Personal Computer audiobook podcast, and his dulcet face you can see on the Classic Computing video podcast. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, everybody. Nice David, to be here. Thanks for having me on.
As per tradition, I have to ask you about weather.
Hot and muggy in good old Greater Atlanta. Clear, blue skies. Actually, milder than lately. So I think it's I don't know, low 80s right now. It'll be like low 90s today. So yeah, believe it or not, that's milder.
Fahrenheit, I don't understand.
Oh, yeah.
Or nonsense.
And the old King's measurements.
How many lengths of his thumb is this? Yeah. Well, cool. We also have pulling up to the table today, Earl Evans with his suspiciously alliterative name. He joins us from Oregon, where they used to play an Apple II video game they just called Trail. Earl is the maniacal force behind the RetroBits podcast and is perhaps most famous. Oh, you got that one, did you? Most famous for being the angriest man in retro computing. Welcome, Earl.
What do you mean by that? Hey, good morning, guys.
Earl, tell me about weather.
Weather. So, you know, in Portland, we don't often get afforded the chance to gloat to other people in the country about our weather, but I'm doing it.
You're
now,
still gloating?
Baby. I'm telling you, week upon week of beautiful weather in the 70s and 80s, gorgeous skies. So I think I actually must have been moved, you know, without my knowledge to some other region, because it's never like this here, but it, man, it's gorgeous.
Huh.
Nice.
Yeah, the trail thing. Is that what you call it over there in Oregon?
Yeah, Earl? I mean, it it's redundant to call it the Oregon Trail. We're already here. We're at the end of the trail.
Yeah, it hit me when I said Oregon. I'm like, hold on.
We didn't die from dysentery, so.
Have you seen that that trailer for the movie version of Oregon Trail?
I have not.
I'll grab it and add it to the show notes. It's really, really funny. It's like a fake trailer for a live action version of the Oregon Trail. It's very, very good.
I think on one previous show, it might have been before our wholesome trio today, that I think we might have featured that.
Are we wholesome?
Yes.
Awesome. I've always wanted to be wholesome.
For that, we're family friendly.
Okay, so shall we get to the items of interest? I say we shall. I am host. I am in the capris. I say yes. First up, we have...
that's so funny. I never thought about them wearing capri pants.
I know. They got those short little pants, right?
They're like bell-bottom capris, even.
Bell-bottom capris are the best kind of capris to go with your big black boots. So like I was saying, we have received some fan mail. A gal named Heather wrote in to say, I am a regular listener of the Retro Computing Roundtable, and I'm always excited when a new episode arrives. You have a lot of diversity in the group, which makes for an interesting and entertaining show. I think Heather has great taste in podcasting, in my unbiased opinion. We also received a note from Steve, who said, love your podcast, by the way. Very interesting. David's level of history knowledge is very surprising, but with Earl, it makes it even greater. As for Carrington, he's a really funny guy and also knowledgeable in the matter. Wrong. I am also Canadian.
Oh, boo.
I like Steve the best of the two people who wrote in. I hope for many more of the Computing Roundtable podcast. I enjoy every episode. Well-phrased fellow Canadian, Steve.
Awesome. Yep. So the other person in Canada is actually listening.
Both of us listen. Yes, we look outside at the snow falling in August, and we listen to podcasts. That's what we do. us Canadians, us Canucks. So, David, you have next up on the list drawn our attention to the Vintage Computer Festivals, or Vintage Computer Festival Midwest, rather.
Right, right.
/ Emergency Chicagoland Commodore Convention.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that upcoming event.
Well, I wanted to help promote it for them, and I'm especially excited because I hope to actually go to this. Later in our show, I know we'll talk a little more about what we're doing personally and stuff, but I will mention I'm in the process of moving, and so that might throw a wrench into this, but I think I can work it out. Because actually, I also have to go to, for my job, first time traveling somewhere, to Boston, so that following Monday. So anyway, so I hope to be able to go to Chicago on the weekend of September 24th and 25th, and this is the second year that they have partnered these two shows. So the Emergency Chicagoland Commodore Convention has been going on. I think it's either the 6th or 7th one, and then this is the second. Oh, Vintage Computer Festival Midwest. Well, you know, it's the 6th one, but it's the 2nd one with them. I'm getting confused. So I guess it's the 6th one in the Midwest. Duh.
That's a lot. Well, that's 6.0 in the name, I guess. Yes.
Yeah. So in any case, I didn't get to go to the VCF East, and you know, there's another Vintage Computer Festival that Earl will talk about in a moment, and we kind of missed that one. But anyways, I'm hoping that maybe I can go be a part of this one. So there's links in the show notes to, you know, they both have a web page, but again, they're both, they're at the same venue in Lombard, Illinois, which is just outside of Chicago. I think it's close to O'Hare Airport, or, you know, closer outside of Chicago.
Are you going to be taking anything to demo, David, or doing a presentation or anything while you're there?
Well, to be honest, I haven't put too much planning in place yet because my life is kind of hectic with other stuff, which we'll also talk about, you know, like my Kickstarter thing and the book project. So I've been real tied up with that. But I do hope to take some books and promote my book and maybe sell some. And just maybe I'll be able to, you know, give a quick talk or so. I don't know about taking anything because I'll be flying, but maybe some small stuff just for, you know, probably do a suitcase full of stuff or something.
You could just bring a big banner that says, I rock on Kickstarter.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that later. But yes, I guess I do, somewhat.
Yes, you do. So do either of you know, what's with the emergency in Emergency Chicagoland Commodore Convention? Like, it's the best named vintage computer festival
I love that.
Of them all. But is that like an area that happens to be called Emergency? Or like what's with the name? Like,
or
it's always
named after the TV show, maybe. Or I don't know what it is with that. You know, I think that there was some... You're making me jog my memory.
Yeah, I'm looking.
It makes my brain cells upset. But it was like there was some other kind of Commodore show or some sort of thing that was held there, and then that didn't happen or it got canceled or something like that. So these guys got together really fast and had what they called the Emergency Commodore Convention, and that name just kind of stuck.
Because it's a great name.
So yeah. That's my rumor. And it's totally unsubstantiated. And
you're going to spread it on the internet, like all good
rumors. I've spoken to the organizer. His name's Jason. I don't remember his last name. I think it starts with a T, but I've had some email exchanges with him. Oh, actually, I spoke to him on the phone. But, yeah, Earl, I think you're right. I think it was organized and run for a number of years, like a Commodore, you know, group and sort of show. And then it just stopped suddenly. And so once Jason took over, I'll find out for next show and get these details. But yeah, I think that's when he started calling it the Emergency, you know, Chicago Commodore. And it's funny, in the show notes, well, it'll be in the show notes, but on the webpage it says, you know, they're announcing year 6 of our successful and unconventional 5-year plan.
Awesome.
So I'm excited about it.
Cool. So speaking of vintage computer festivals, Earl, I think you wanted to draw our attention to one that happened recently.
I do, and we'll have a link for this up in the show notes. It's the Vintage Computer Festival Southwest 2.0. We actually missed getting any coverage on this, and it was just held a week ago on August 6th and 7th in the University Center at the University of Texas, Arlington.
And this is why I was getting confused, because this one is only the second one.
So. Right. Mm-hmm. Yep, this is a 2.0. Now, I don't think we know anyone that went. If you were there, please feel free to email us. What's that email address, David, again, for the
RCR podcast? At classiccomputing.com.
Yeah, please feel free to email us and let us know what was going on at the event. And if you didn't go but want to look at some pictures, right on the front page here at, on this link is a another link to some nice pictures that you can take a look at.
Yeah, quite a few of them, right? A couple dozen.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we'll try and find out some more about what the haps were.
Yeah, I didn't know about this one at all coming up. It came and went without me even knowing it was happening.
Yeah, I knew about it, and I had emailed Gil Carrick is his name. And, guys, I feel terrible that, you know, I forgot to, you know, put it in the show notes last time or bring it up. It looks like it was pretty successful. I want to point out there's a Houston Computer Museum, and they had a little table and have a lot of cool-looking little robots on there.
So robots.
Definitely look at the pictures. Yeah, he's got like a Heathkit mm-hmm. hero, and what's that guy in the middle? Are you guys looking by chance?
Yeah.
Oh, what's he called? The Omnibot 2000. Yeah, I always wanted one of those.
Yeah, me too. Oh, yeah, look at that. Nice. I would definitely recommend listeners to the show go check this out. Yeah, I wish I had known about it ahead of time. I don't think I could have trekked all the way down there anyway, but would have been something for us to promote, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess no chance either one of you are going to the Chicago one, huh?
I can't go, actually. Yeah, I wish I could go. I mean, I'm out there so often for my work. My company's headquarters is actually in Chicago, so I get out there 4 to 5 times a year. But, yeah, I can't get to this. Darn it. I can't. It would have been nice if I could have swung it as, you know, kind of a combo business trip and pleasure cruise. But
yeah. Well, if somehow you can, it happens, let me know.
Will do.
That's, what, 5 weeks away? Is that right? Today's four weeks away?
Yeah,
around a month. 5 weeks away, yeah. Okay.
Nice. Well, next up we have something that seems to have been attributed to me in the show notes, but I don't think I brought this up. But you know what? I'm going to seize it anyway. It's regarding the IBM PC turning 30 recently. It had its 30th anniversary. I think it was because August 12th, which is yesterday as of the recording of the show, August 12th, 1981, IBM had announced its new PC, the 5150. I think it was launched in New York. And a fellow named Benj Edwards has done up a couple of articles celebrating the anniversary. One he did, which I really enjoyed, something on PC World called Can You Do Real Work with the 30-year-old IBM 5150? It's really fun. He spent a weekend, or actually a little more than a weekend, I guess, using an old 5150 as his primary computer. So he worked with it. He got on the net with it. He got his email with it. He Twittered with it. He did some writing with it. And he talks about the difficulties. He really spends the first 2 days trying to get the thing to work.
Yeah, he had to fix that
RAM stuff and like lugging, you know, what he says, a few metric tons worth of material into this small room and trying to get it to work. And he sort of sums up what it worked well for and what it didn't. That it was, you know, less good, I guess. me speak good. Less good for things that weren't envisioned at the time. Like it wasn't great at surfing the web. He hooked it up by a serial cable to a Linux computer to surf that way, and wasn't as good at getting email and that sort of thing, but was terrific for writing, he found. So for the sorts of things that people would have used the computer for at the time, he found it was still quite the good workhorse, even though he had difficulty switching it to 80-column mode. And it's just a really good write-up. If you're interested in vintage computers and used in a modern setting, this is definitely an article I think people should go read. It's a little 5-page thing on PC World, and I found it really enjoyable. Did you guys check that one out?
I haven't looked at it yet, but I can just say in general, you guys probably know this and probably many of our listeners, Benj Edwards is a great writer.
Yeah.
So just about anything he puts together is going to be very enjoyable. So I'm going to go check it out after the show.
And yeah, he does a lot of really like pictorials. And so the first link is actually his website, so definitely spend some time there. But yeah, I especially like the one, Carrington, you brought up about actually using it. And it's really surprising all the stuff that he was able to do with it.
Yeah.
I wish I could have his day job.
Yeah, the other one was on Technologizer, where he did something about IBM PC oddities, 30 years of the machine that changed everything. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunately, the way Technologizer divides it up, you get 14 little snippets of it. I really don't like it when sites do that versus just giving me the whole thing. But it's got some great photos, and it talks about BASIC, and it talks about sort of the odd things that existed at the time and have stayed with us from that old IBM PC era.
Yeah, I've heard why. So you guys tell me this is true, but do you know why they do that?
For page views, I assume.
Yeah, because now they're getting 14 page views.
No, they're not.
You.
They're getting like 2 or 3, and then I give up. Ugh, so annoying. I hate it.
So you don't you don't follow the cheese all the way through the maze?
I don't. No, I get distracted too easily.
Darn it.
What a surprise, everyone says.
You're just not a web 2.0 kind of guy, I guess.
No, I'm web like 1.5 at most. Next up, we have – I'm keeping things going because I'm wearing the capris. Next up, David is pointing us to Personal Computers, A History of the Hardware That Changed the World. A very dramatic title, David.
Right. And speaking of the little flip windows or whatever, here you go.
Yep.
So – now, this is kind of fluffy, and really I put it here so we could kind of say how wrong it is.
I was about to say the same thing. I found it both fluffy and a little inaccurate.
I mean, you know, the machines that they pick. So first off, it's the Apple II. So let's just go through it real quick.
Woo-hoo!
So
let's just stay there for a while.
The Apple II, did it change the world? I mean, sure. I think it was very significant. The IBM PC, certainly very significant. What is this next one? The Toshiba... Well, the laptop. This is a Libretto laptop, which I guess when they got that small and lightweight, the form factor changed the world. And then they talk about netbooks. Now, do you really feel like netbooks, you know, are they really that significant, do you think, in the evolution of the computer? They're just sub-notebooks.
Right. I don't think that they were. I think that they were, in a sense, a fad leading up to tablets.
Yeah. And then at the end, it's the tablet, which I think is very highly significant. So what... The biggest issue I have is pre-Apple II, and then for that matter, simply only going, again, the Apple II, very significant, but just as well, I think the Commodore, you know, Commodore with the PET at that point in time, and then the TRS-80 Model 1, I think all three of those are almost, you know, debatable, but equally billed as significant. The first consumer computers that right out of the box, normal people could use them, you know, arguably. But then how about pre that? You know, the Altair?
Yeah,
I mean, come
I
on,
found I think it was a lady named Amy Mae Elliott. That was her name. So this is on Mashable, and honestly, this read like something that hadn't been researched at all. It's just like somebody off the top of their head said, "I've heard of these things." Mm-hmm. They talk about tablets. They mention basically none by name, not even the big one. I found really it's quite a bit of a fluff piece.
Yeah, to kind of just jump on the back of the IBM 30 year anniversary. Yeah.
But it's a real difference between this and those other pieces we were pointing to from Benj that really seemed very personal, were very well written, full of tons of little factual tidbits. I mean, it's really just night and day difference between the two.
And Benj is actually a computer historian.
Right.
So, I mean, he's very much into the hobby and into the, you know, he's very knowledgeable about the subject matter, not just covering it like a, you know, a reporter, if you will, about just another topic to cover.
Right.
I guess the question is, who are you trying to appeal to with the piece? I mean, in this particular case, I wonder if you talk about things, real significant things like the Altair, or even going, you know, back to the first, one of the first really mass-produced computers, the PDP-8. But people are going to look at that and they're going to go, what?
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to relate to it because, you know, 99.9% of the population didn't have any exposure to those. So it's kind of, who are you going for and, you know, what are they going to vibe with? I kind of feel like, you know, people of this generation would vibe with this Mashable article possibly more than some of the more factual pieces that are going to appeal to us techies. So...
See, and I agree. I totally agree with you. And I don't, and so I'm not so much, I don't have a big problem with it being kind of light for a more general audience. But I think for her having 5 items, she could have easily just off the top of my head put 3 more in there and kept it light just as a, you know, light coverage of the Altair had to be in there. And also, I think, for instance, like the Osborne 1 should have been in there. You know, it's one of the first portables, not a laptop, but portable computers. And then, I don't know what you want to say, the Macintosh kind of probably should be in there. But, you know, you could go on and on. Okay, what about the Amiga? And, yeah. But certainly a few more other computers should have been in there, even as lightly touched, you know?
Yeah.
You didn't have to go techie about it, but just, you know, what was significant.
Yep, right. Agreed.
It'd be sort of like doing the same thing about the evolution of the automobile. I mean, what would you leave in and leave out, and how detailed do you get about it? But
if you didn't show a Model T, you know, but you instead showed something like a DeLorean, Right. It'd be kind of like, what?
Which everybody knows is the most significant automobile ever produced.
Yeah, show me a Model T that can travel back in time. Yeah, whatever. No competition.
I love the DeLorean, Earl.
But the Model T doesn't have to travel back in time. It's already back in time.
Good point. Yeah. Excellent. Yes.
Gotta get back in time, Earl.
Okay, Earl. I'm going to throw it to you now once again because you are drawing our attention to another InfoWorld piece. This one is Tech Survivors, Computer Technologies 25 Years or Older That You Still Use. What kind of tech are they talking about?
Well, they've got a few examples here, and it's interesting. They talk about the mouse, and, you know, people might think that's a fairly recent invention. I put fairly in quotes because we've been using them for a long time, but it actually goes back a long way. Have you guys ever seen the demo on YouTube called The Mother of All Demos by Doug Engelbart?
I have.
You know, listeners, if you haven't seen that, maybe we can scrape up a link for that up on the show notes.
Yeah, but I'm just looking for it now, actually.
It's, as I recall, from the 1960s.
68.
And, you know, you're seeing technologies that you just would shake your head and have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, had such a lineage, went all that way back. But other things they talk about in this article are email, and I don't know, do you guys still use email today? I don't really use it. MUD. It was interesting that they brought up multiplayer games in this context. You know, they said that MUDs are still popular today, and I think there is a genre, kind of like the interactive fiction genre of folks that still play it. But I think even if you expand this to things like texting, I was just marveling the other day that, you know, we've got iPhones and iPods that have, you know, three-axis accelerometers and high-res, you know, retina graphics. And what do the kids do on them? They text.
Right.
So it's hilarious. In this article, they also talk about the office products like Excel and Word, the Macintosh, LaserJet, and hard drives. Which hard drives is another one that the lineage goes fantastically far back in time. So, interesting article. I thought that it was, you know, nicely done, even though it is another one of those click-throughs that you were talking about, Carrington.
But. Right. But it's funny how so many of the things that are mentioned here have lately in the news, the last year or two, been we're talking about them over and over again as if, are we entering a post-PC era? Are these particular things dead? Like the idea of hard drives, or at least the idea of a spinning hard drive versus solid state. It really seems like we're on the cusp of those going away. And ideas like the CD-ROM, which has been left off Apple's most recently released computers. And just like little tech like that. And the idea of a mouse versus going to a tablet. I mean, that's – so it's a bunch of this tech seems to be, in at least in the popular press, we're discussing, is this the death of the PC era and taking down with it things like spinning hard drives and mice and, you know, mice and other things that I mentioned that I can't recall.
So maybe they should have named it Technologies 25 Years or Older That You Still Use But Might Not Tomorrow. Because
well,
I wonder if it's wrong.
I mean, haven't we been talking about the death knell of these things over and over again? And well, yeah, it does sometimes happen. Not a lot of us use floppy disks anymore outside of a retro hobbyist position. I don't know. Like, do you guys think that we really are on the cusp, say, of the end of the physical media? Or is this the end of DVDs and CDs?
I think we're on that road to a certain extent, but no, I think it's being way overhyped. So along those same lines, like the end of the hard drive, there's no way. You know, flash memory or I guess that's a good enough word or whatever. You know, there's no way it's capable of holding the volumes of data that business and just people need anywhere near.
Well, not at the
right
moment,
now.
But yeah. When you think 3, 5, 8 years from now, like what are the odds that we'll have spinning hard drives?
Well, let's look at it this way. Let's say, again, it's off the top of my head, but let's say a machine like a MacBook Air, like how big of a flash drive, SD drive, does it come
up
with?
Up to 256, anywhere from 64, 128, or 256 are the current ones.
Okay, so let's say 250 gig is kind of a standard, and if you buy a, you know, a higher end with a hard drive, it's at least a 2-3 ratio, perhaps. Is that right?
Right.
So, and that's kind of been that way for a while, which doesn't mean it'll stay that way, but...
But look at this way. Let's say I was in charge of Apple and I got to pick what their next product is. And I come out with the new MacBook Pro and I base it on an Air. It's going to be a 15-inch thing, much larger. But I yank out the DVD. You now have to take that as an external thing for when you want it. And I just simply replace that with a second 256 really wickedly fast rated with the first 256 hard drive. So now you have a 500 gig hard drive that's crazy fast, solid state, and a built-in RAID. And you have a lighter computer that has a longer lasting battery. Like, wouldn't most people leap at that? How often do you use the DVD versus using the hard drive?
I think the solution will be some combination of parallel drives like that, you know, making, right. you know, I mean, yeah, so I certainly, I think we're on the road to that. But see, I think we're on the road, so I'll speak from a consumer standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think we're clearly on the road in the next decade of where you will less and less actually hold a computer, and my meaning being that you'll deal with input devices or an output device. You'll deal with flat panels, and they can be the one that acts as your television set, the one that hangs on the wall, the one you hold in your hand, the one that's on your desk, whatever. They're just displays and input devices. Your computer is an appliance in a closet, because it is the input output device of all digital media, be it data, or which it's all data, you know what I mean, whether it's entertainment or it's computing or whatever. And then with the cloud or anything else, you have access to your stuff everywhere.
We do waffle back and forth on this, haven't we, though, for like 30 years now, it seems. We go back and forth between, no, a computer should be an individual's thing and you own your data and your own, to, oh, no, we're back from one large thing that we access to essentially a terminal. And it seems back and forth every few years, one side or the other gets a big step
and
forward.
I think the flat panels of displays, they would certainly still be computers to a certain extent. They wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't be terminals in that sense, but... Yeah, you know, the whole idea of the bulk of where your data is and stuff would be centralized. But then there'd always be exceptions. So I think for a good while there'll always be exceptions why you need spinning hard drives and why you need standalone computers and that sort of thing.
Earl, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think all of the above is true. I think it's going to be difficult to completely get rid of the concept of a standalone computer. One thing that I've noticed is that the appliance devices are more for consuming data. You know, I think my iPod is great, and I've seen the iPad 2, I think those are fantastic devices, but they feel more to me like a device I'm going to use for consuming data. I'm going to be watching videos, or maybe I'm going to be texting or writing a quick email, but I'm not going to be creating a lot of, for instance, I'm probably not going to be podcasting, or at least recording my podcast.
I recorded stuff down at Kansas Fest using just my iPad.
And how did that go for you?
Went fantastic. Yeah, I just used a mic that just connects to the iPad, and it's powered by that. And I did a bunch of little interviews and got to record some sessions. I tried out a few different bits of recording software. iRig seems to work best for me, and GarageBand as well, which was fantastic. It was an interesting sort of strange experience to carry that around. I also recorded a bunch of things on my iPhone using a different microphone to try that out as well. And that was really nice, because then you just basically have a microphone, a little handheld thing, all as one unit. You can just use it like a man on the street thing. So that was interesting.
But ultimately, didn't you use your real computer, if you will, to do the final work to that?
Not on that stuff. That stuff I intentionally went through and did it all on the iPad and did the editing and all of that just to try it out. So there'll be some stuff in an upcoming 1 megahertz that was recorded that way. And it ended up sounding pretty good. I mean, at least as good as the amateur stuff I do at home. I think it's an interesting thing to see how much has been in the news. Like, to bring it back to these articles that we've pointed to a few of them now in this show, but there's been so much lately, I find, of people talking about old tech and looking back on tech. And I don't think it's just the IBM PC turning 30. People seem to be just – I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I'm seeing more and more people talking about retro computing and old technology and old computer things in the general news. Have you guys been finding that?
I've been seeing that as well.
Yeah.
It has not been hard at all, for instance, to come up with articles to talk about for this podcast or for Retrobits.
So why do you think that is? What's with the zeitgeist here?
Wow, that's a hard question.
Well, you're on the spot, Earl. I got the Capri's. Answer my question.
Why does the herd move as it does? You know, I think one possible reason is that we're, like we've been talking about here, we're at a cusp, but we're at a kind of a crossroads of computing where people are seeing a profound change in the way that we interact with computers, with things like the iPad, you know, kind of the appliance computing world. And maybe there's a little nostalgia for when we actually had this keyboard and mouse sitting in front of us.
Well, I think our I think a key word is, and I'll explain what I mean by distributed is, you know, our computing world now and our way of everything we do through communications and computers, it's distributed now. So we're constantly going between different devices, our handheld smartphone, our tablet, and our laptop and or desktop. So, you know, the things that we're doing, we're distributing it along all these different things. There's not kind of a unified platform that we use anymore. Does that seem right?
And also, as we mentioned, you know, kind of along that line, David, we used to have computers that we had some sort of an attachment to. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you had a computer that was, if not something that you loved as a technologist, at least it was familiar to you. It was, you know, like your you know, cool old jeans that you won't get rid of because they're just so comfortable. You
yeah,
know?
It was part of your character, too, and your identity, and you expressed yourself through it. And I think there's a
certain
level we still do that. But you're right, the commoditization, too, of just, I mean, you know, I love my Mac right here that I use. It's awesome, you know, and Mac OS X Lion, brand new. But, you know, come on, really using that, and or, I mean, it's up for argument, but Windows 7, I mean, it's not that different. I think there's more similarities than differences at this point.
And we bounce around between multiple devices, just like you said, so no one device...
Android versus iOS.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And nothing gets the lion's share of our attention, if you'll pardon the pun.
I'll do the puns here.
So, you know, with all of that, you know, I think that sort of shift in the landscape might be why people are having some nostalgic feelings. Possibly, you know, it could be the same as when everyone rode horses and then the automobile came out, and as that shifted around, there were probably a lot of people who were still interested in the old carriage days.
And age. I think computers, you know, the IBM at 30 and personal computers in general at, what will we say, 35 or so, is, you know, they're getting old enough now, too, where it's time for some more mainstream nostalgia about it in general. So, you know, we picked a good time to be into this.
Absolutely. And speaking of being into the hobby, one way to increase the things you have to play with, of course, is to pick stuff up at auction. Look at me and my professional segues. So let's take a look back.
That was smooth.
He said, drawing attention to it. So let's take a look back now quickly at the eBay auctions we all selected last time. I will choose me to go first. So I went a little strange on the cusp. Or at least on the very edge of what might consider technology. I picked the Polaroid SX70 pop-up folding land camera. I remember when I selected this, I had a bunch of people sitting in my dorm room at Kansas Fest listening to me, or at least my end of the recording of the podcast, all of whom were looking at me a little weird when I popped that up on screen and said that was my choice. But my choice it was. So let me see. How did it...
$80.
Oh, sold. $80. I think, was that a buy it now? Or looks like it only had the one bid, or had no bids. I don't know.
Sold for, yeah, it might have been buy it now.
I think it must be, because it doesn't list the number of bids. So I guess it sold. Well chosen me. I'm a big fan of these cameras. So if it was you, our listener, who picked it up, then awesome. Congrats. There's a lot of other ones for sale. It's the sort of camera that comes around quite a bit, but it's tough sometimes to find one in really good condition that says that it's working and has been tested and also has reasonable shipping prices. But it's the sort of thing, if you're looking for it, you can definitely have an eBay watch list and you would be able to pick one up. They do come around quite frequently. So what did you guys select for your auctions? What about you, Earl? Let's go to you next. What'd you pick?
I picked the CompuColor 2 vintage computer. I told you guys these were rare. I'm actually quite surprised at this ending price. This went for $1,532.
Wow.
So
crazy.
That's
I'm very surprised. I mean, wow.
You know, I could have seen it up into the high hundreds, but breaking 1,000, that's impressive.
You never know.
Wow, 1,500 change.
Yeah,
crazy.
Not that I don't think it's worth it. I mean, like I say, these are pretty darn rare and, you know, fairly well known in the niche collecting community. So, but wow, $1,500, awesome.
And especially for an auction where the description says he tried powering it up and it just smoked and sputtered or whatever, so he shut it off. And it still sells for more than $1,500. Crazy.
So it's a bad sign, but a good sign. I mean, we know that's usually a capacitor thing.
Yeah, just popping. So, and at least it does have power. But yeah, crazy that it sold for that much. I'm not surprised that it sold, but I'm a little surprised at the price.
Me too.
Yeah.
I,
and David?
I just, oh, sorry. Just about the CompuColor, so I did a quick search to see if Because, you know, sometimes when this sort of thing happens, magically a couple other ones come out of the woodwork. Oh, wait a minute, I'll sell mine too for $1,500. But nope, no other ones. So, I mean, I think they are pretty rare.
I don't remember ever seeing one at auction. I mean, I don't look for them in general. But
I've only ever heard of them and seen pictures and books all these years I've ever been into it.
So, David, what had you picked to suggest people pick up last week?
So, I picked the Video Brain Vintage Cartridge Computer 1977, which did sell for $96 with 8 bids. So, that sounds probably about right. It's a reasonably probably rare device, I mean, if I had to guess at it.
Right.
So, yeah.
But definitely of our three choices, Earl's sold by far for the most. Not that it's a competition, because I didn't win. So we will move on to this week's or this episode's eBay auctions. David, why don't we stay with you? What are you suggesting people take a look at this time?
Well, I went with two because in looking, it's just these two really jumped out at me, so I'll try to go real quick. So the first one is an Atari Portfolio, and it works. Comes with a rare promo pin and more, it says, so like a manual. Looks very clean. It's got 2 days, 14 hours left, $35, no bids, and reasonable shipping, you know, to me, which should be reasonable anywhere else, too. Doesn't say where it is. Let's see. Let me drop this down. Oh, it's in San Francisco. So it's only $18 to me in Georgia. So,
I think this will go. I'm surprised that there are no bids yet.
Me either, because they're reasonably rare, too, and they're really nice. And if I'm not mistaken, I know it's from 1989, but this is one of the earliest, I think, really DOS-compatible little palm tops.
Yep.
If not the first one.
Yeah, and if nice you remember units. Terminator 2, you can hack Skynet.
You absolutely can. But, I mean, these are really nice units, and it's a very reasonable starting bid. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little surprised there are no bids so far at under $35, and with reasonable in the U.S. shipping, $30 shipping for me, but the joys of Canada. But there's only 2.5 days left as of this recording, so I don't know how much will be left, what availability there'll be for our listeners. But
we'll have to see what happens. But yeah, I have one
too. What was your other choice?
And I have an Atari Portfolio too, so I really like it a lot in my handhelds. So the next one jumped out at me because I think it's a pretty good little combo pack here. It's a TI-994A computer, and it's got a speech synthesizer, and it's got the expansion box with it. No bid so far, a little over 3 days, $66. Does have $66 shipping, though, to me, and there, where are they? I might have to drop this down now. Okay, Cincinnati. You know, they've changed. Where's the description here? Oh, they put the other stuff ahead of it. Okay, so it's got peripheral expansion system, cables, wired remote, software cartridges. You know, so it's a pretty good setup. Oh, a cassette recorder. Kind of a lot on the shipping, though. But I don't know, $120, let's just say, $130 right now, if you got it for that entry bid and shipping.
If you don't have a TI-99, then it's a great starter set.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, the peripheral expansion unit is actually
the most valuable
rarer than the computer itself. And with shipping all that stuff, it's not surprising to me that the shipping costs are higher.
Mm-hmm.
Though they do offer free local pickup if you're in the area.
Isn't that expansion chassis, it's essentially empty, though? It's not very heavy or anything? I've only seen one once.
I don't know about weight, but this would have a lot of bulk.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Right. And they don't even ship to Canada, so boo.
Those jerks. Anyway, so there's...
So, Earl, what have you picked for us? Do you got 1, 2, 15 auctions?
I have a couple.
Everyone picks two.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually did something interesting this time. I picked one eBay and one not.
Nice.
The eBay auction is a Commodore B128. I've always loved these computers, the rounded shape of these computers. You know, they just make them such an interesting Commodore machine. And I've only seen one in person, you know, so they're a bit more rare than like the old squared off PETs and that kind of thing. I thought the rumor was that Porsche had something to do with the, my buddy of mine's a Porsche enthusiast. He'd kill me for pronouncing it Porsche. in fact, I was reading about this and found out that the Porsche design is not what they went with. They went with another design, but still they wanted something that was rounded, and they actually envisioned this design propagating down to future machines, although it never did. It was one of those things that just kind of hit the wall, but would love to have one of these in my collection someday.
I agree. I've never seen one in person, but I've always loved the industrial design of this. It's one of my favorite Commodore machines.
if I can say something too, me too. And I'm adding a link here. So I'll put in the show notes, but it's to just an image where it has a display, the matching display. Because you know, it's kind of, it looks really great with the matching display.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
which
those
is
must
also
even...
kind of rounded, as I recall, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So those obviously must be pretty hard to get a hold of.
Right. Nice. And what was your other choice?
Well, you know, I've always loved new floppy disks. Floppy disks and batteries, for some reason, just, you know, it's just exciting for a technical guy. And so here my other option is a new old stock set of 8-inch floppy disks.
And Mac.
Now, you might look at this and go, what the, where would you ever use something like this? Is it just collectible? But the last time when I was at the Seattle Retro Computing Society, one of the folks there had a old S100 bus system, CPM, with twin 8-inch floppy drives. And
cool.
It was cool to see those things running again. If he needs media, hey, here you go. And, you know, for the low, low price of $30 plus shipping. So
look, it says they have 6 of them. Did you see that? It says quantity 6.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they and it has a make offer, so maybe if you want to get 2 or more, maybe, you know, maybe it'd go lower.
You might even be able to get a deal. Now, another reason that I picked this auction is because it's on the Vintage Computer and Gaming Marketplace, which is for vintage computer type stuff, an alternative to eBay. I'm going to say you're not going to find nearly the amount of stuff here that you'd find on eBay. You're going to find in the dozens of items here where you'll find in the thousands on eBay. But the one thing that I notice about this marketplace, it's not all cluttered up with weird stuff that doesn't belong in that category.
Right.
For instance, when I was searching for an auction this time to talk about on the podcast, I was finding, for instance, SATA cables. Serial ATA cables. Did you guys know those were vintage? I didn't know they were vintage. You know, I thought they just came out in the last few years. Silly me. But, you know, they must have been around for decades because they're in that category. It just drives me nuts that they're there. Mm-hmm. So if someone wants to see a venue that has just vintage stuff, and hey, you know, maybe, you know, kind of give a little boost to the community and then check this out. So you'll have this link in the show notes, and you know, feel free to take a look at the other stuff that's in this venue while you're there. I think, you know, from time to time, really interesting stuff pops up here.
Do you guys want to consider next show that we, instead of choosing something from eBay, you want to go with this?
I like it.
For a different change of pace
sure.
or whatever? Why don't
Let's
we do that?
Let's shake things up and throw some traction over there because it is a really great site and it's a really great alternative source. I completely agree with Earl that eBay, well, it's a you know a great place for dumpster diving. It is there's so much garbage
yeah.
in the vintage sections on eBay. For the most part, I don't even browse eBay. I only use saved searches
yeah.
with tons and tons of keywords. So I'm much more focused on trying to find something that I'm specifically looking for, and I wait for those auctions to come up because there's so much chaff to go through on eBay to find the wheat. Or however that metaphor is supposed to work. So yeah, I think that's a great idea. Let's on the next episode shake things up a bit and just choose stuff from there.
And this
so it looks like. Go ahead, David.
Oh, I was gonna say this item, Earl. It's sold by Eric with a K. Mm-hmm. I believe isn't that? I think this is the guy that runs the site, isn't it? Eric Klein.
Yeah, it may indeed be the same Eric because it's got the same spelling.
Yeah.
Eric with a K. No, that's the guy with the red beard who's a Viking.
Yeah.
Guys, come on. Pay his price or he gets the axe. So let's take a brief look at what I have selected on eBay because I didn't know we were switching things up. But I, unlike you guys, am not going to be so greedy. I've just selected one. And big surprise for everyone. Hope you're sitting down in your Caprice. I have selected something Apple II oriented. I have picked a RAMworks 3 card. In this
Ooh.
Case, the reason I picked this one is it comes with the 2 meg plus expander, which is a much more rare item. This is an expander board. There was the RAMworks 1, 2, and 3, and the 3 with the expander will give you a total of 3 megs for your vintage Apple II computer. Works with the 2 plus and up. Highly, highly compatible. The nice thing about the RAMworks is anything that could support more RAM will work with the RAMworks 1, and the RAMworks boards and 100% compatible boards are readily available. They're the sorts of things you can generally pick up quite cheap. What's nice about this one, though, is it has that little 2 meg expander board. Those are hard to come by. So here's a nice way to pick up a set and give yourself, say, in a 2E, a lot more RAM than you'd be able to get
That's
with a RAMworks
crazy.
On its own. Yeah.
I've got chip envy.
You got chip envy.
Hey, look in the pictures. And do you see if you scroll down a little bit, in the pictures, there's a couple of screenshots where the utility where it's testing the card.
Sure, yeah, it's fully tested, really worked out great. And that's another reason like this. It's a completely 100% tested, and all the RAM in it is working fine, everything. So it's a really nice system. It's going for a bit of money already. But yeah, it's I don't think it has – how much time does it have left?
A little over a day.
Day. Oh, unfortunately, if you're listening to this and excited about my auction choice, probably too bad, unless we get this show really quickly. And it's currently at, what, 162.50. So it's going for quite a chunk of change already.
What would you do with a card like this?
What wouldn't you do with a card like this? You would run through the streets with a grin on your face.
with your mouth wide open.
Apple Works, for instance. This is pointed out directly in the listing itself. And it's one of the main uses. If you use Apple Works, if you're using a vintage Apple computer for either word processing or especially database or spreadsheet work, they were very constrained by the built-in memory caps. So, you know, you could only work with a database so big. And if you're using a vintage Apple computer to, say, catalog all your books or DVDs or you know, wine you've had or something like that, or want to write a novel and not keep having to have all your chapters in individual files, basically, these expanders will let you work with files, you know, as large as you could fit on a floppy or more. So if you've got a vintage Apple II, you're working with Office Suite type software, and you have a hard drive in particular, you might end up with very large files. And this way, you could actually work with them and keep them in RAM. And with the Apple II as well, you can use a RAM disk. And so you can load things up in that and speed things up. So it's nice to have that extra headroom.
Oh, fascinating. So you can use a RAM disk as well as take advantage of it.
It's an Apple II. You can do anything with an Apple II. It's awesome. So, guys, let's have a little bit of a discussion and go to our closings. David, tell us, what have you been up to? What do you got going on?
Well, first I'm going to mention again, so the big thing in my personal life is that we moved to the Atlanta area 2 years ago. So we rent, and our landlord is looking to sell the house. So we've decided to move, so we're really trying to find another place to live. We're waiting on approval for a house that's just two houses down. So that would be really nice to be able to move there.
Easy move.
Because we have kids that start school on Monday, so keep them in their same schools. But there's just a lot involved because the house needs to be kind of readied and cleaned up. And you know what I mean? The whole thing, we got to pack up, move out of here, clean this place up. So that's you know, a lot of stress and a lot of stuff going on. But so the other big thing going on in my life, though, is the Kickstarter book project, which is a huge success. So I just brought it up. I'll put a link in the show notes. It currently has 84 backers, 57 hours to go. It's 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time Saturday, $3,140.
Awesome.
So really excited about that. I had made 8 premium levels at $100 where 8 people can have a picture of themselves on a quarter page and like a text balloon where they say something about their favorite computer or whatever. So all 8 of those sold. So that's approximately, I think, and not everybody got a book. So I think it's 82 books right now. And, you know, at the end, Kickstarter through Amazon Payments, they'll take approximately 9 or 10% of that, leaving about, say, $2,800. So I'm looking at being able to preprint about 250 books right now. And
that's
of course,
amazing.
Yeah, 82 of them will be sold. But that leaves me with, a 100 or so prepaid for the sell. And then, of course, as I sell those, I can print more and keep it going. So I'm really excited about it. The covers, I just checked my email because I was kind of hoping the guy that's doing the covers, hopefully he'll be done with it today so I can post it for this last push on the weekend to show what the cover is going to look great. I'm really happy with it. Finishing up the first dozen pages of like my, I don't know if you call it an autobiography or whatever, but you know, my story is in the front of it. So anyway, so that's just so excited about it. It's going to be great to have this actual real book done. So I'll be an author.
Very exciting.
Awesome, David.
Thanks.
It's a great project, and I, in particular, I'm really delighted that the retro computing community came out so quickly and in such force to support it and support it at such a level. That's the most amazing thing because it's such a deserving project. I'm just so excited for you. I can't wait to read it. It's amazing.
Me too. And having said that, you know, Kickstarter is such a neat thing, and I would I don't think I'm all of a sudden a Kickstarter genius or anything, but I have to be honest, and I did a number of some good research before I got started. I followed what Kickstarter said, the tips that they gave that has of a successful campaign, and I've done well, and I'm willing to help anyone. So anybody out there that would like to do a Kickstarter project, feel free to contact me, and I'll give you my best advice and help. But this is a great venue to do these sort of things. So, like last show, we were talking about Carrington, like those, or Earl, I don't remember. You know, remember like the cards where you can read SD cards into old computers and just hardware devices, books, whatever. You know, this is a great venue to help raise funding.
Yeah, like the CFFA 3000 that I picked up.
Yeah, exactly. So Kickstarter is a pretty neat thing.
Awesome. And Earl, what do you got going on? What's going down?
Well, you know, unlike David, I don't have any like life-changing events here going on. Like,
okay, we'll pause. We'll wait.
Wait, I'll interrupt because Earl, when you succeeded on that Epson PX8, right at the end of the retro challenge, that was great.
Yeah, I was just talking about the personal side of life. Oh. You know, the real life. I'm not moving. I'm not changing jobs. I'm not running for office.
That's good.
Yeah, that's very good. But on the technical side, you're right, David. I did have a success on the virtual disk drive that I want to make for the Epson PX8. I've talked about it before. It's a little bit more rare laptop. You can still buy new old stock from this one outfit. Mm-hmm. And the challenge was that...
Show notes.
I couldn't get it to communicate with the circuitry that I was putting together based on the Propeller microcontroller, which is a really fun chip to work with. But I couldn't get the two to talk. And then I finally figured out what the problem was. It was just a wiring problem from the, you know, from the reference that I was looking at. Once I got that done, boom, it was talking. And now I'm off and running. So,
nice.
You know, hopefully I've got this board coming that has a Propeller chip, 512K of RAM, and a micro SD card reader, which is just going to be perfect for this, and it's only $40. And that, you know, I'll plug into some of the rest of my stuff, and you know, who knows, in 2 to 3 months I might have a, you know, more functional prototype of this thing running. So I'm really excited. It's fun to, you know, get my hands dirty and build something for the old hardware. And there's actually, since they found out about the new old stock, there's a little bit of excitement in the Seattle group about the PX8s, some emails flying around there. So, you know, who knows, I might even have some folks to kibitz with in the Northwest here. So the other thing that I've been playing with off and on is a TCP/IP stack for my old PC clone compatible.
Nice. I've been working on one of those for a different one for the Apple II. Nice.
Yeah, this one's called MTCP, and if you want, we could have a link for this in the show notes as well. But mm-hmm. It uses what's called a packet driver technology, which was an old kind of abstracted technology that if you had a packet driver and then you had software that supported it, it was kind of built like a, you know, layer cake. So MTCP is one among many packages that can take advantage of this concept of a packet driver. So you get the software loaded in the right sequence, and you can get your old PC clone up on the internet all by itself. As long as you have an Ethernet card in there, it doesn't need any intervening equipment or anything like that. And so one of the things that I want to do with it over the next few days is log into the VAXs and PDP computers up in Seattle directly with Telnet from this old PC clone, and it'll be totally a 1980s computing experience, you know, all the way through. So something to check out if you've got an old PC clone. I mean, you can usually find an Ethernet card for those things for 10, 15, 20 bucks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can, you know, get on the internet. Again, just like Benj was talking about, you're not going to be browsing the internet with a GUI at 1280 by 1024 or better, but you're going to be on the internet doing Telnet and FTP and those kind of things.
Sure. Great way to check email and stuff. Yeah, that's fantastic. That's really exciting. Nice. Well done, you.
And by the way, I'll put the link for buying one of the new PX8s in the show notes. Apparently, I didn't put it in last time. So anyway, it'll be in this show notes.
But that was over to the notebooksupplies.com
yeah.
site. Perfect. Thank you.
And Earl, didn't last time you were going to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, right? Weren't you? Or
that's still upcoming.
Oh,
that's
okay.
September.
I'm sorry.
All actually, right. I have a flyer right here. It's September 24th through 25th. And yes, I am
get
going.
So confused.
It's confirmed. I'm taking a camera crew.
That's right.
And
right.
We're going to have a fun time.
All right. Well, those are in last time's show notes. heck, I'll add it this time since we brought it up. But okay.
Very good. And as for myself, I've been doing a couple of fairly strange Apple II related projects. Having come back from Kansas Fest, I have been quite I guess you could say inspired. There were so many amazing things there and so many modern projects. One of the things I've done is I think I mentioned it maybe on this show, some other show at some point. I mentioned I have a second sight system. It's a bizarre little collection of cables and cards that will connect a vintage old Smith Corona. Sorry, I'm not talking about Second Sight. I've been working with Second Sight as well. Ignore that. I'm talking about the Messenger module. Show notes and talking and hosting. So much things to talk. My Messenger module. So I have a vintage electric Smith Corona typewriter now connected via this weird thing that existed for a while called the Messenger module. I've got that connected to my Apple IIe. It lets the Apple IIe use the Smith Corona as a typewriter. I had that working before, but I've been writing little bits of software to sort of play around with it and get the Messenger module doing all of the various features. It supposedly has these weird abilities. I've been able to use the typewriter now as an import keyboard for the Apple II. So I can type on the typewriter, and not only does it type on a piece of paper, at the same time the keys I hit appear on the Apple II. So that's kind of cool. I now have a piece of software I've written, just a really, really basic little thing that lets me use a joystick to navigate the keyboard on the Smith Corona. So it starts on the letter A, and you can move. So I'll move left, right, up, down, and as you move, it types the keys. So you just move around with the keyboard, and I just move the joystick, and it really doesn't do anything, but it's just sort of cool to sit there with a joystick, and as I move it around, different keys press.
You should totally YouTube that.
I'm going to do something with it. I'll release it, and I'll do something with it. And I have a version that's amazing. So you know you start on the letter A, but it doesn't actually press a key until you press the button on the joystick. So you first have to navigate, and it's like a little game. I'll move up, down, left, right, and I'll be thinking, okay, I think I'm on the letter R, and I press the button, and I see what key actually presses. So not necessarily the best game in the world, but kind of fun, and one of the first real hardware hacks I've been doing on an Apple II, at least in ages and ages and ages. So that's been a lot of fun. And I also picked up something called Task, which is the Apple script compiler. It was written by Microsoft, because Microsoft did the first version of Apple script and licensed it to Apple, and then Apple changed it a bit. But because of that, Microsoft really knew AppleSoft Basic for the Apple II quite well, and they put out for a while something called the Apple Script Compiler, and it's just something that will take an AppleSoft Basic program and then compile it into binary so it runs a lot faster. And I've been playing around with that, and that's been a lot of fun to see the sort of the speed differences and stuff, and create self-contained binary programs for the Apple II that you can just knock off in AppleScript. So it's been a lot of fun. So those are the sort of two Apple things I've been playing around with quite a bit, plus my Second Sight thing, which is just a video card, not that exciting. So that's me. So I guess that wraps things up. Unless somebody else has something to throw in, compliment me on my capris, maybe. No, nothing. Okay, then. Thank you for
capris.
Thank you for.
He did not wear capris.
I am. You're right. I am not wearing capris. That sounds more ominous than I intended. So, if you have enjoyed the show, you can send feedback to, I believe you're saying it's rcr@classiccomputing.com, and maybe rate us on iTunes. If you're into that social media thing, then I guess all the cool kids are talking about it, so you could give us a Twitter on your Facebook with the Google Plus, or however that goes. So, until next time, stay off my lawn.
Bye, everybody.
Take care.